I will now hand over to our third speaker, Dr. Jenny Connor.
Thank you. Good morning. That's a very good place for me to pick up because I'm going to just talk a little bit about the likely impact of reducing the legal BAC limit on traffic crashes. And the first thing, I guess, to note, here we have the current limits, drivers over 20. We tend to talk a lot in 80 milligrams per 100 mil language, but that's the same as 0.08. So currently 0.08 for adults and under 20, 0.03, which is coming down to zero. And we're in a minority of developed countries in having such a high limit. You can see there the UK, the USA, Canada and New Zealand still have a 0.08 limit, but it's come down in most other countries that we usually compare ourselves with. In the UK, as long ago as 1998, the House of Lords Select Committee recommended a 0.05 limit, having considered all the evidence, but it was rejected by the government. And that action by the government at the time has been attributed to lobbying by the alcohol industry. So there are plenty of people who want to ensure that alcohol, the hospitality industry and so on, are not affected by any new laws that might come in. So you can see there are a number of countries that have a lower limit than 0.05, and most of the countries listed there have previously had a limit of 100 or 0.1, as New Zealand used to do. So in terms of crash risk, this graph is based on New Zealand data and is in the Ministry of Transport's current road safety strategy. The curved lines show the increase of risk of a fatal crash as alcohol level goes up. So going along the bottom of this graph is increasing blood alcohol concentration, and the curved lines show the exponential curve that Alan just mentioned, that every time you increase your blood alcohol concentration, you don't get a linear increase in crash risk. You get a multiplying of the effect. So small differences in the blood alcohol concentration of drivers will result in large differences in crash risk. You can see from the three different coloured lines that the curves go up faster for young drivers than they do for older drivers. So the orange line is the 15 to 19 year olds who will be affected by the zero limit that's coming in, and the green line is the 30 plus year olds. And you can also see, if you look at where the current adult limit cuts through the green line, it's just under 20. So the 20 refers to a 20-fold increase in risk compared to a sober driver. And you can see the current youth limit also cuts through the orange line at about the same place. So under the old limits, they were pretty much in line in terms of the risk associated with alcohol. And the proposal to drop the youth limit to zero and the adult limit to 0.05 essentially reduces the risk associated with both of those to about fivefold. So in the next slide, this is based on the risk of death in nighttime crashes. And you can see that for drivers with no blood alcohol, no measurable blood alcohol, there's quite a difference in risk by age. So you're five times more likely to die in a nighttime crash if you're young than if you're old, even without any alcohol involvement. But as the alcohol concentration goes up, the risk goes up. So these are multipliers. This is compared to a driver more than 30 years old in the white square there. Compared to that person with no alcohol, these are the multipliers for risk in other situations. And of interest here are these two numbers. If I can do this. So this is the young drivers with no with a zero alcohol limit, and the older drivers with a 50 milligram limit or a 0.05 limit, the risk is about the same, but it's about a quarter of the risk associated with the current limits. Now, as been mentioned already, you don't have to have very much alcohol aboard before your driving skills are affected. And this review from 2000 went through all of the different sorts of skills that are used when you're driving and the effect of small amounts of alcohol on those skills, and concluded that, has been covered really, that there's impairment of driving-relating skills as soon as you've drunk any alcohol at all. So although there's an exponential curve and the risk above 0.05 seems to be what we're most focused on, there isn't actually a threshold that your skills start to deteriorate with any alcohol at all. Now, the thing from my point of view, one of the most important things about this evidence is that I've been involved in research on driver sleepiness in car crashes, and there's a very strong interaction between driver sleepiness and low levels of alcohol. Driver sleepiness is something that's very difficult to regulate, obviously, but also to even educate people about. People find it very difficult to get their heads around the fact that if you have, one drink when you're in the most alert state of the day, it may not affect your driving very much, but if you have one drink in a very sleepy part of the day, like the middle of the afternoon or late at night, it will affect your driving skills much more than it would other times. The amount of tiredness that you need to have to interact strongly with low levels of alcohol is actually quite low. And if you have one restricted night's sleep, say you only have 5 hours sleep one night, that's enough to create quite a major interaction with a small amount of alcohol. So it's just one more reason why low levels of alcohol are actually quite important. Now, in this next slide, this is very busy, but this is just to make the point that there is a lot of international evidence, not just in experimental situations that show that your skills are no, your skills deteriorate when you've been drinking, but actually on road evidence about what happens when you lower the driving limit. You get large reductions in crashes. And not only that, you also get large reductions in the alcohol levels of people caught by random breath testing. And you can see under the fifth point, the ACT Australia in 1990, the studies of drivers caught at random breath testing sites showed that there'd been a major reduction in people with high levels of alcohol. So they're the group from 0.15 to 0.2, which are really quite high levels of alcohol, reduced by a third. And for those very high-risk drivers over 0.2, there was more than a halving of the prevalence of those drivers at random breath testing stopping points after the reduction in the legal BAC limit. So we have evidence from a wide range of countries that have all reduced their limits, all sorts of different contexts, but the impacts on safety have been quite consistent. As well as the impact directly on traffic injury, the changing of the drink driving limit will change public attitudes and behaviours. So it will be part of what we like to call a change in drinking culture in New Zealand. There's plenty of evidence from other places that reduction in the limit will affect how much the drinking drivers are drinking. So even the heavy drinking drivers, the amounts that they drink come down. It encourages drivers to keep a better count of their drinks, and it means that people who are drinking and are going to drive make a decision about whether or not to drive at a much earlier stage of the proceedings, because, of course, if you if you make that decision after you've had eight drinks, it's much less likely that you're going to make a sensible decision. So getting people to think about it earlier in the stages of intoxication helps them make better decisions. In Denmark, the studies showing that more drivers decide not to drink at all when they go out, or to restrict themselves to just one drink. And there's a greater awareness of the need to control drinking in general, not just in relation to driving, but it actually puts hazardous drinking on the agenda for many people. So it's been these figures about the predicted effect in New Zealand of dropping the limit from 0.08 to 0.05 have come from the Ministry of Transport. And you can see there's a range of how many lives and how many injuries and how much money would be saved per year. But I think we have to consider those to be large numbers. If we had any intervention that could not only save 15 to 30 lives but also save many millions of dollars, I think we should be looking at it very seriously. So there's always opposition to changing the rules, and the opposition to this rule change plays on a lack of scientific consensus about the evidence, and that argument's completely out of date now. There's no lack of scientific consensus. Opposition focuses on interference with moderate drinking of normal people. And I think, as Alan's pointed out, the limit at 0.05 is still not completely safe, but it does allow people to have moderate social drinking occasions and still drive. The opposition says the public won't support it, and that's patently not true. In the last Ministry of Transport survey, suggests that 85% of New Zealanders think that you should be able to drink two or less drinks in the hour before driving. And again, going back to Alan's figures, two or less drinks in the hours in the 1 hour before driving keeps you, almost everybody, under the 0.05 limit. So that has 85% support. More than half of New Zealanders, 56% in that survey, thought you should only be allowed to have one drink or none in the hour before driving. Only 2% supported the idea you should be able to have four or more drinks in the hour before, and that's actually less than the current limit. So there's very small support for the current limit if you ask people how much they think you should be able to drink. Okay, and finally, a few summary points. I think that there's good evidence of effectiveness of lowering the limit and reducing injury. The exact size of the impact is hard to predict, but it's large, and it will also save money. It's very clear from the research that publicity and increased enforcement increases the effectiveness of any measure like this, that if we lower the BAC limit but we don't do anything about letting people know and know the reasons why, and we don't enforce it enough, it's not going to have a maximal effect. Has good public support. It will lead a change in the drinking culture. The legislation needs to contribute to the change by setting some limits based on what New Zealand society thinks is acceptable, and they clearly think that this reduction is acceptable. And in terms of the crash risk, it's consistent with the youth limit of zero. Drink driving is not a youth problem in its entirety, and it's fair to have an adult limit that lines up with the youth limit. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much, Jenny. That was fascinating. I'm going to unmute everybody now so that I can open it up for questions, but in the meantime I will pop up on the screen the infographic that we have designed to go along with this briefing, which is available for everyone to use if you choose. It addresses that question of does drinking a couple of drinks socially mean? Will that be curtailed by reducing the limit down to 50? So here we go. Just bear with me for a moment while I unmute everyone. Okay. Do we have any questions for our panelists? If you could please introduce yourself and also your organization when you speak. Thanks. Any questions from the floor? Maybe I'll start things off then. For Jeff, are you there?
Yes.
I wonder if you could just elaborate a little bit more on the point about, driving while intoxicated. And the point is that something that you mentioned that something that another of your colleagues, Doug Selman, has stated. Is that something that has wide acceptance as a statement, or is that something that's controversial?
Well, I think it's quite controversial. I think, as I had in my third slide, that when a person's at 80. They are quite significantly intoxicated. But I think because people believe 80 is a legal driving limit, that says otherwise. So, that was a point I wanted to make, that at 80, people are showing signs of intoxication, which are probably obvious to themselves and certainly obvious to others. Yeah.
Thanks. Are there other questions for our panelists?
Darcy, it's Paul Easton from the Dominion Post.
Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Could I just ask Jeff again, at 80, could he just elaborate on the sort of things that you'd be seeing in a person at 80? He did cover
yes,
them briefly
well,
before.
Yes. Well, I think you'd be starting to see some thickening of the speech or even some slurriness of the speech.
Yep.
Poor coordination, such as I mentioned, like knocking things over inadvertently or tripping up or even walking unsteadily. People who are at 80 are often slowed in their thinking when you're having a conversation with them. They're slower.
Yep.
And I think at that level, things like nausea and even giddiness can start to come in. So, those are the points I wanted to make. That this is a level that's showing signs of alcohol intoxication, maybe not as much as getting to the stage of vomiting and having memory blackouts and so on, which occurs
sure.
about 120 or so. I've spoken to people in settings with using a breathalyzer, and they're still legal, but they're absolutely appalled to find they're still legal because they feel so intoxicated and wouldn't even think of driving. So they can perceive themselves as being quite drunk and amazed to find they're, in fact, still legally able to drive.
Thanks for that, Jeff. Any other questions?
Clint Towns from Radio New Zealand here.
Go ahead.
I'm wondering what your thoughts are on what Cabinet might do.
Any of our panellists want to share their insights into that process?
Well, we don't know. We do know that it's going to be considered quite imminently, I believe. Does anyone have any knowledge about that?
I'm aware that the Law Commission's final report and recommendations are due out this month. I don't have the date of that, but when we see that, we'll know at least what's being put up for the government to consider. And I think my impression is that it's going to be the recommendations for alcohol control in general are going to be quite. Quite wide-ranging, and of course this is just one part of it and is being considered separately at the moment. But I think having the Law Commission review in the background is going to be quite influential.
And there was also the Ministry of Transport Safer Journeys submissions, really. So I presume that is before Cabinet, the information from those submissions.
Yes, I've spoken to the Ministry of Transport, and that's currently before Cabinet. They expect something by May.
It was interesting, I think, that Jenny went over some of the resistance, because this is not the first time this issue has come to Parliament's consideration, is it? It's something that's come up over a few years ago, and there was no change. But it's interesting, having heard the evidence today from us three, that this level of 80 is still there, and you know what the resistance might be. I know Jenny's covered some of those factors.
I think one thing that's often discussed is that reducing the limit penalises, you know, reasonable, nice people like us. When really the problem resides with, you know, the demons who are the recidivist drink drivers who are, you know, we really should be going after them and leaving normal people alone. But unfortunately the evidence doesn't really stack up for that. I mean, lowering the blood alcohol limit isn't going to deal with all drink driving, and there's quite a large proportion, about two-thirds of drink driving injuries are caused by people with blood alcohols above, this is according to the New Zealand data anyway, above 0.15. So that's quite high. So two-thirds of them involve drivers with double the legal limit. But they're not all recidivist drink drivers. And so if you look at the proportion of drink driving crashes that involve recidivist drink drivers, it's more like 25%, or a quarter of them. And a lot of those very high blood alcohol concentration drivers, the ones that double the limit, are actually binge drinkers who don't have previous traffic convictions. And the international evidence suggests that if you bring the driving limit down, those levels drop, or the number of drivers driving with those very high levels of alcohol come down quite markedly as well. And that was the Australian evidence that I was talking about. And so I think that the argument that this is targeting the wrong people is a bit misguided, because, in fact, it has quite a big impact on those very heavy drinking drivers that cause the majority of the damage.
Thanks for that. Do we have another question for our panellists?
Well, it's Geoff Robinson again. I just noticed in the ALAC submissions regarding people who, if this law came into 50, that they were promoting that people between 50 and 80, in fact, would have an infringement penalty rather than necessarily going to court with a drinking and driving conviction, which I thought was interesting.
All right. It seems like you all have covered things off very thoroughly, and our journalists who dialed in seem to be satisfied with that. So I will now thank our three panelists. We are going to make the infographic that you see here available in our resource library. It's under the image section. You can also refer back to the slides of the speakers. Those are currently uploaded in the resource library under the documents section. And we will also put up an audio recording as soon as we can after this web conference has wrapped up. If you have any questions, or if you'd like to arrange interviews with our speakers, just give us a call here at the Science Media Center. Thanks very much to all the three of you for your participation, and to all of the journalists who've dialed in. Thank you very much.